Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Peter Burns is with us, SEC Network host, and we've got to step aside. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Welcome back inside the Quicken Loan Studios at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Remember to listen to the show on the go. Just download the Yahoo Sports Radio app by searching Yahoo Sports Radio in your app store. You can listen on any computer or smart device by going to streamysr.com. That's streamysr.com. Remember, normal data rates apply. Well, the countdown to the start of the college football season, it's hard to believe it is just a few weeks away. And tonight, we're going to shine the spotlight on the SEC. We're going to preview the 2015 season. Of course, the SEC looking to reclaim their football supremacy after a two-year title drought. Expectations always high, looking to get back on track to their winning ways, and I'm talking about not just in the regular season. We are so delighted to welcome in tonight from ESPN National SEC Network host, that is Peter Burns, and looking forward to his perspective on the 2015 season. Good evening. How are you, Peter?
It just hit me when you said that SEC's trying to get back. I mean, they had won, what, 7 in a row? And
yeah.
The drought of 2 years without a national championship, it feels like forever over here at the SEC Network.
Well, Alabama is the last SEC team to win a national title. So the last two national titles have been won by the Big Ten Conference, Ohio State, and, of course, ACC, Florida State in 2013. But I have to say, I mean, the SEC's always been viewed as the premier conference with the best programs. Who, in your mind, Peter, has the best shot at a championship this season?
Well, I mean, I think you still look at the teams that are always up there. I mean, if you're looking at what Alabama continues to bring, just because recruiting-wise, they bring in so much talent each and every year with Nick Saban and Lane Kiffin there being the offensive coordinator, which I think is dynamic. Auburn, of course, is going to have a fantastic squad again. They got a kid named Jeremy Johnson at quarterback who played only one half because Nick Marshall was suspended for the first game of last year's opener against Arkansas, and just was unbelievable. 240 yards, a couple of touchdowns, looks great. Now they add Will Muschamp to the defense, who had just gotten let go from Florida. So that team's going to be solid. LSU is kind of an interesting story as well. I mean, they just have a quarterback issue, but top to bottom outside of that position, although that's a very important position, they definitely have an opportunity to go deep. And I think Georgia's kind of an interesting play there in the East. I mean, a lot of people, it's kind of like the NBA right now, where the Western Conference in NBA is a little bit more dominant than the Eastern. That, I think that's the way that it is in the SEC. I think the SEC West is a little bit deeper than the SEC East, but Georgia could be one of those teams that could sneak up. They could win the SEC East, then win the SEC Championship. And if you win the SEC Championship, more than likely, you're going to get a chance to play in that college football playoff.
ESPN SEC Network host Peter Burns joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We'd love to hear from you. Chime in. Join us at Twitter at eRadio Sports, and you can always email the show at Elissa@YahooSportsRadio.com. In a moment, we want to break down some of those particular teams, of course, Alabama. But is there a particular dark horse? Who's going to be the surprise team out of the SEC?
You know, I think there's two teams right now that a lot of people are taking a look at, and I think one that really no one is talking about is Texas A&M. But Kevin Sumlin's been able to build each and every year. He has had the recruits come in, but just hasn't been able to piece it together. And now he's got a great quarterback in Kyle Allen, who was going to be a sophomore now. Young kid, but really looked good in the last part of that season. They've got a new stadium opening. There's no one really talking about them, but there's just a ton of talent on that team, and I think they kind of get lost in the mix. I think another team that's kind of interesting in the East is Tennessee. Butch Jones nearly took the job at the University of Colorado a couple of years ago, and at basically a midnight decision decided, you know what, actually I'm going to wait, you know, a little bit longer, and Tennessee offered him the job, and he's done a fantastic job of kind of bringing back Tennessee to the national conversation as far as teams that can really go and really do stuff. I mean, if you go on, I was there in Knoxville in the spring, mm-hmm. and it looks like it just looks like a Nike factory. You know, it was just the way that uh-huh. it reminded me of being in Oregon.
Right.
That it just really pops, and then the recruits love it. And Butch Jones has done a great job of getting these young kids ready to go. And they got a kid at quarterback named Josh Dobbs, who's literally a rocket scientist. I mean, this kid, he's studying rocket engineering or aerospace engineering is what he's doing. I'm not even smart enough to say what he does. But he's such a sharp kid, very mobile quarterback. And I think he's going to be one of the reasons why Tennessee is going to get people fit when they start playing.
Well, I'm a big Boomer Sooner gal, so I'm looking forward to the matchup with Oklahoma that second week in September.
That's
going to be
game.
Dynamic. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, everyone, right. Everyone's talking about that game because a lot of people think Tennessee, this could be the year. Butch Jones kind of told us, hey, listen, we're about probably 1 year away from getting all these recruits in. But I think if they go out there in that Boomer Sooner game against Oklahoma and they win that game, then all bets are off. Then Tennessee says, hey, we don't need to wait necessarily until next year. This might be the year that we can make a run.
SEC Network host with ESPN, Peter Burns, joining us tonight at YSR, the Big East Sports Show. So let's step back just a moment. I mean, talk about just the strength of the conference. I mean, is it overrated? Just hit on the depth of the league.
I think the difference is, I think if you look at the Big Ten, especially with Ohio State, what they've been able to do, you look at the Big 12 with TCU and Baylor, and you look at some of the teams in the Pac-12, is that every single conference has at least one or two national contenders, one or two good teams. I think ACC probably struggles a little bit this year because Florida State, I believe, is going to be a little bit off, and there's no one else that's going to be able to contend. But I think overall, you look at every school has one to two really good teams. I think the SEC has five to six, maybe even seven really good teams. And I think that's the difference. It's not because, hey, the SEC is clearly by far better than any other conference. I think what it comes down to is more along the fact that when you look at the depth of the conference, the other conferences just don't have the amount of good quality teams, the amount of teams like Arkansas that can scare people, or Ole Miss, or even, you know, Mississippi State, who was ranked number one for 5 weeks of the season last year. So I think it's the depth of the conference rather than just the ultimate number one team that makes the SEC probably still the strongest conference in college football.
Well, to support that statement, look at seven teams in the final 2014 AP Top 25 poll. And then coming into this season, I mean, some of the preseason publications, Peter, nine teams are in the preseason in the top 25. I mean, so from top to bottom, when you view the SEC, I mean, it really does seem like they are the strongest.
Well, a lot of it has to do, too, with the facilities and down there. I mean, the facilities in the Southeast, and it becomes just an arms race that they keep building bigger and better. I mean, the facilities at Tennessee are incredible. They just redid what Kevin Sumlin in Texas A&M, what they've put the money into their facilities is out of control. Alabama, of course, has great facilities. So, I mean, that's the deal, is that not only is it a target-rich environment for all the recruits, that's where a lot of the athletes are coming from, you also combine that with the fan base being so crazy and so pumped up for it. 100,000 people to show up for almost all of these games, or traditionally for a lot of these games, and the facility. So I think that's why you just continue to have year in and year out, that's where all eyes are, at least to start the season.
Peter, would you mind sharing just how much tougher the postseason has become for teams in the SEC? I mean, obviously the depth in the conference, it's survival of the fittest, but there are no easy roads to getting to Atlanta, and there certainly are no easy roads advancing to the college football playoffs.
No, I think that's what it comes out to be, is that when you look at teams that are playing in a little bit weaker conferences, and I'll say the Pac, not necessarily Pac-10, but or Pac-12, when you're looking at the Big 12, or you're looking at especially the Big 10, is that you're probably playing three really tough games all year long. You know, you'll play a Michigan State, or you'll play an Ohio State, or you'll play one little road game that's kind of tough. And then all of a sudden you're a little bit fresher when you get into a college football playoff situation. But for the SEC, this is these teams' seventh hearts. And, I mean, it's no different than, like, a golfer, right? I mean, if a golfer has three hard holes on a course, well, you know, they might be able to get through at even par or maybe one under if they're playing well. But if they've got nine or eight hard holes, well, it's just an odds game. You know, you're probably going to hit a bad shot here and there. And I think that's what kind of caught up to the SEC in the conference or in the college football playoff. But I think at the end of the day, what it goes to show you is that there are great teams all across the country. The SEC is not that much more dominant than all, other than the fact that there's just probably more of those better, more of the above-average teams in that conference than in the other.
And not to digress, of course, you were a member of the St. Mary's University golf team, so you knew a thing or two about golf, don't you, Peter?
I used to be decent. I still try to chase it every once in a while. So.
Peter Burns is with us, SEC Network host, and we've got to step aside. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Hey, Peter Burns, we are so glad you're with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Remember to connect with us. We'd love to hear from you at Twitter, at eRadio Sports. You can email the show at Elissa@YahooSportsRadio.com. Of course, Peter is joining us on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line, comparing rates to help you save. Now, that is Progressive. You know, we're talking about the SEC, but what is your perception of the Big 12 Conference? Obviously, TCU, Baylor, they're in the hunt for the national title. I mean, all eyes are on Oklahoma, Texas. What will they do this year? They want to get back to some winning ways. But the Big 12 Conference, 2-5 in bowl games last season, and then 6-11 against Power 5 conferences. What do you think?
I think the game of the year, honestly, in all of college football, not just Big 12, I think the game of the year is TCU Baylor. I mean, I think to that there is, and when we're looking at TCU's schedule and especially Baylor's schedule is unbelievably advantageous for them to make the college football playoff. I think that the winner of that game you can almost pencil in as getting into the college football playoff, which is crazy because the difference was it used to be Oklahoma and Texas. That would be the one that,
right,
hey, you couldn't
right.
wait for the Red River rivalry and playing in Dallas and ready to go. But now it's TCU and Baylor. And I think the big difference is that I think TCU and Baylor decided a couple years ago that, hey, we're going to play up-tempo, spread offense type football. And I think for Texas and Oklahoma, they said, no, you know what, we're going to go with the bread and butter style football that got us, you know, our namesake in the 70s and the 80s and 90s. And guess what? The game has changed. And, you know, and I think now Texas and Oklahoma are realizing, hey, listen, I don't know if we can play that style football and still win like we used to 2 decades ago. It's the TCUs and the Baylors that have adapted quicker than those bigger name schools, and that's the reason why they're having that success.
Well, Baylor, it sounds like what you're saying, that they're at the easiest path to advance to the college football playoffs. What are the other three teams that you see ultimately getting there?
I see Ohio State. I mean, Ohio State really has to just stumble and fall and, I mean, trip. I mean, they've got to, you know, in the golf term, shank a few OB to not get in the college football playoff because they literally, you know, it's such an easy schedule for them. They have, frankly, I think one of the top to bottom, maybe the best team in the country. So I think Ohio State's going to be one of them. I think the winner of TCU, Baylor. I think Auburn eventually is the team that comes out of the SEC.
Okay.
And I can't figure out. I mean, I've talked to people in the Pac-12, and they seem to be a little befuddled. But I still believe now with the way the college football playoff is set up, 4 of the Power 5 schools are going to get one in. And then so you go by the process of elimination. That takes ACC out of the equation just simply because I don't think that there's a school good enough in the ACC right now that deserves to be in that same discussion as the other Power 4. Mm-hmm. But then again, hey, things can change as we sit here 3 weeks away from the start of the season.
SEC Network host with ESPN, Peter Burns, joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, and a team that is hungry to get back to their winning ways in a championship. Give us your view of Alabama. I know you touched on it briefly, but some uncertainty with that quarterback situation.
A ton of uncertainty. You know, they really want Jake Coker to take that job, and they thought he was going to take it last year, but he just couldn't quite make the throws that they wanted to when crunch time came. So they went with Blake Sims, who could at least move around the pocket a little bit and give Lane Kiffin a little bit of a safety valve. So, you know, they're hoping that Jake Coker takes that job. It's a five-way battle right now. So I think ultimately it will be Coker, but the thing is they're probably going to have to play a little bit closer to the vest with him. So you lose, you know, you don't have a quarterback right now, and then you lose DeAndre White, Christian Jones, and, of course, Amari Cooper, who went the fourth overall pick to the Oakland Raiders. That's a lot of production on the wide receiver position. Their schedule is brutal.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I think that they struggle. I know that this is probably going to be the best defensive line that Nick Saban may have ever had. I just don't know if offensively they're going to be able to do it. And I can see 3 to 4 regular season losses for Alabama, which is almost unheard of.
Wow. Yahoo Sports Radio, of course, is located right here. Our base is in Houston. So let's head over. Let's talk about Texas A&M, anticipating some improvements defensively. But what is the best case scenario for the Aggies?
I think for the Aggies, you can look at for the Aggies, if things fall properly and Kyle Allen is exactly who we thought they were, was going to be, and then they got Kyler Murray, the stud recruit that they're. I know they're going to try to work in a couple of packages as well. I think this is a team that can win 10 games. And actually, if they go ahead and win 10 games, that might give them an opportunity to sneak into the SEC championship, because I think Auburn, Alabama, LSU, Ole Miss, Arkansas, all these teams are going to beat up each other. I mean, it reminds me of when the NFC East, when the Cowboys and the Eagles and the Redskins were all really good, and they were all kind of beating up each other. I think that's what the SEC West is going to be. So I think the ceiling for Kevin Sumlin is, hey, don't talk about us too much. We're going to, you know, surprise some people. The one thing Kevin Sumlin told to me at SEC Media Days when we sat down is he goes, we're changing the way we practice. They used to practice in kind of what we call pretty boy practice, mm-hmm. where no real pads, and they looked real fast and everything, but they weren't physical. And Kevin Sumlin said, we're changing that this year. We're going to be a lot more of a physical team. So if you can combine the speed of what Kevin Sumlin's recruits can do and match that with the physicality of the SEC, watch out, because I still will call it right now, I think Texas A&M beats Alabama in Kyle Field later this season.
It's his first time on the show. Peter Burns, SEC Network host at ESPN. Check him out. I know he'll be checking out the PGA Championship this weekend, and that's an entire different conversation, which we don't have time for. Peter, thank you so much. What a pleasure to have you on. Thank you, sir.
Can't wait to do it again.
You bet. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR. Stay close. Welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Elissa Walker-Campbell guiding you through the fastest 2 hours in radio. We'd love to connect with you. Join us at Twitter, at eRadioSports, as we are inside the Quicken Loan Studios. Always a pleasure to have back with us. We've potted up the mic, Andy Pondillo, with our weekly MLB news and notes. Good evening, Andy. How are you on this Friday?
I'm doing great. Definitely a good time of the season right now.
Yes, the countdown is on. The regular season's going to be over before you know it. So the pessimistic side, it's going to come out of me. What teams do you anticipate are going to fall apart in the final stretch?
I don't know who exactly is. There's always at least one team that falls apart. Last year it was the Brewers. A lot of times I look at young teams as teams that haven't been there. You got to remember, teams that are young, their minor league seasons are much shorter than what they face in Major League Baseball. And I feel like that tough schedule, the travel schedule, you start to see it come into play around this time of year. The dog days of the summer are here and into fall. So I would look at teams. Unfortunately, my Astros would be one that I would look at.
Really?
The Cubs. Uh-huh. And then probably the Mets would be the three teams that you could see just hitting a wall. That doesn't mean they will, and doesn't mean that I think they will. But if I were just to go by the law of averages, those are the three teams that I would pick. I would say the Yankees could also be suspect, though I don't believe it, but they are thin in the starting pitching department. So does that start to wear on them as they go into September?
Well, I saw our producer, Joe George. He was grimacing a bit when you rattled off the Cubs. Now, come on, I got to go to bat for the Cubbies. Well, they've won 11 out of their last 12. How can this be? How can you have that stance?
Oh, they're very good. And Cubs are going to be one of the best teams in the National League for a long time, the way it sets up. I just look at these teams, their first year starting to get over that hump. Do they have enough to hold on, get through those 6 months of the year, especially when you're facing a team like the Pirates now, who's been there and done that.
Yeah.
And then the Cardinals, mm-hmm. It's just one of those things where you're bad luck and a really tough division. In the Mets case, I could see the Mets just hitting a wall, completely collapsing, New York Mets style. They like to do that type of thing. Though the NL East is a different animal. There's teams in there that are going to give you a break when you face the Phillies. The Marlins, horrible this year. Sometimes these teams can luck out a little bit because of the product of their division. We've seen the Astros struggle lately, but they are in the American League West. The only legitimate contender right now, in my opinion, the Angels. Rangers have had hot streaks, but when you get in that two-team race, and the Angels really aren't that great of a team this year, in my opinion. Just a good team. It does make those little stretches where you start to fall apart a little easier to recover from.
I know you're highlighting the 2015 teams, but you had said in your opening statement in 2014 it was the Brewers that the wheels fell off. Why?
Yeah, it was the Brewers. Actually, also the Oakland Athletics, which the Athletics were a bit of a surprise because they had been there and they had done that trade for John Lester. It seemed like nothing was the same after that, after they lost Cespedes. Comes to the Brewers, I think it was their pitching. I look at teams that might be a little thin in the pitching department as well. That's why the Yankees, I think a lot of people keep waiting for them to collapse. But I don't know. I don't know if I see it in them. It's definitely the type of team that would, though. And the Brewers, it's just not enough starting pitching is what it seemed to be, in my opinion. Offense should have been pretty good. They had Carlos Gomez, had Braun at the top. Aramis Ramirez didn't have a bad year last year. So they definitely had the pieces last year. They just couldn't hold it through. And maybe it was a depth issue, maybe versus a youth issue when it comes to the Milwaukee Brewers.
The familiar voice, Andy Pondillo, with us in studio tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Andy joins us each and every week on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line with our MLB news and notes. Reach out to our audience, connect with them.
That's Astro Chat on CallMeTowsHill.com, podcast about the Astros.
Very nice. And of course, the trade deadline, it has come and gone. A couple weeks have gone by now. What teams are surging with their new acquisitions?
Well, that's definitely the Blue Jays. Everybody keeps pointing to the Blue Jays now as the team to beat in the American League or the American League East. You know, I don't think the Yankees are going to go down easily in that division. Definitely the Blue Jays have the better-looking team on paper, but the Yankees have the experience of World Series champions. That's going to be a fun race to see how that plays out. I do think the Blue Jays do get into a wild card position regardless. Do I think they're as good as people are making them out to be? No, I don't. I don't think their starting pitching is good enough to get through three rounds of postseason play, but yet it's a good jump for the Blue Jays to get into the area that they're in, to be a competitive team, to be a playoff team, and probably gives them a very good shot to go and sign free agents in the offseason where teams or players are going to start to believe that they are a legitimate contender in the AL East.
Andy, you're not 100% convinced about the Blue Jays. What is the key to making a deep run in the playoffs?
A lot of it's the 1-2-3 pitching depth, the starting pitchers. A lot of it just will come down to that. But at the same time, there's just certain guys who perform and certain guys who don't. Now, you look at the Giants last season, you look at their experience in postseason play, that's a huge element, and it was so important that it actually offset having a narrow starting pitching rotation. Really a team that shouldn't have won three postseason rounds, put everything on Madison Bumgarner, got some key hits. Somehow they were able to navigate their way through those rounds of postseason play. Really, there's really almost no logic. The thing is, you just get into the tournament and give yourself the best chance. I'll try and predict who's the best team, but when it comes down to it, we get surprised every year who makes runs in these postseason tournaments. So I say the starting pitching is the most important element, but some would argue the bullpen has become just as important in the modern-day baseball.
I agree. We're inside the Quicken Loans studios right here at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Elissa Walker-Campbell along with you. We've been along with you for the past 2 hours. Join us at Twitter, at @eRadioSports. Give us an update. Talk to me about why have the Astros struggled as of late?
Now, they've struggled on the road quite a bit, and that's been an epidemic for them. They're back home now, so maybe they reel off 10 games out of 11 on this homestand.
We'll
see.
That'd be nice. Mm-hmm.
I don't really have a pinpoint solution for it. They play like a different team. They play sloppier. Their at-bats fail. It's just a mixture. It's a young team. That's the thing I go back to a lot when I look at teams that struggle for odd reasons. And it's, you know, you're depending on a 20-year-old shortstop in Carlos Correa who's been spectacular, but you're depending on him to be your lead run producer. You're depending on him to make fantastic plays late in the game constantly at shortstop, and you're not getting enough out of your veterans on the road. The Evan Gattises, the Luis Valbuenas of the world, I'm sure they would tell you the same thing, that they should be doing more for these young guys in that lineup. So they're going to have to figure out how to win on the road. I think they can actually still make postseason play with the model that they're going at right now, mainly based on the American League West. But if they go into postseason play, they have no choice but to figure out how to win on the road.
How healthy have the Astros been this season?
Pretty healthy. I mean, they've had some injuries like every team does. George Springer was pretty devastating, and you've noticed a pretty big difference on the road without him, actually, because what Springer allowed you to do was score runs without getting 11, 12 hits. He was constantly on base. He was constantly stealing bases. He paired him with Altuve. These guys were both probably going to steal 30 bases this year combined at the top of the order, both high on base averages. They really helped the middle of the order where maybe these guys didn't get on base, but it gave them runners to knock in. It gave them guys where they could hit a ground ball to shortstop and have a productive day. And now they don't have that as much without Springer at the top of the order. So that has hurt, but nobody's going to feel sorry for the Astros. There's injuries on every team. The Cardinals, notably, have suffered two major injuries this year, and they're the number one team in baseball. So I don't think it's been too bad for the Astros. You always want to keep that pitching staff in check, and they've been able to do that.
Give us an update on C.J. Wilson. What happened with his elbow? He's got some bone chips?
Yes, I don't think he's going to pitch again this year. I know there's some optimists out there that maybe he comes back, but you know, the Angels really, he's more of a depth pitcher at this point, and he's a good pitcher, but I don't think that if they got in the postseason play, I don't think he was going to be a huge factor for them. They have other guys, and Garrett Richards, Santiago, these guys are studs up there. It definitely hurts, but I don't think it devastates the Angels. There's depth on that team as well.
Well, that can pay big dividends for the Astros. That gives them a little bit of a bump and a boost.
Yeah, when this division can come down to one or two games, those types of injuries, that could be the difference in one or two games. You never know.
Okay, our man, Andy Pondillo, with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We love always getting up close with Andy, getting his perspective on the MLB. So the Royals, is it the team that's got the most swag at right now? And could they win the World Series this year?
I think they should. I mean, if there's any team that has the everything put together for this year and they made the moves for this year, it's the Royals. They've got Ben Zobrist at the top of the order. He's a Royals guy, in my opinion, really fits that motto. Johnny Cueto, not the top of the rotation. And they're the one team where I do often get scared about teams with lack of starting pitching depth. They're the one team that I think can get by without it. And Johnny Cueto certainly helps that. Do they have that 1-2-3 punch? They sure don't. But if they're leading after five innings, this team is about as automatic at shutting the door with their bullpen as I've ever seen in my life. I have not seen a bullpen to this level before. I mean, it's literally four closers coming out after the fifth inning, essentially. So they have a really good chance this year in a weak American League. I think they can get back to the World Series. But again, like I said earlier in the segment, last year we had the Angels as the favorite. They get knocked out and swept by the Royals in the first round. It takes one hot team to ruin everything for the people who predict these playoffs and ruin it for the teams that are the favorites.
You know, Andy, just a moment ago you were talking about the Cardinals, and it seems they're just, you know, on pace to win at least 100 games this year. Why are they having success? Because they know how to win.
Their starting pitching is just crazy this season. Without Adam Wainwright, I could not imagine this starting rotation being as good as they have. Michael Wacha pitching like a true ace, Carlos Martinez. These young pitchers, you match them up in a series, it's going to be pretty hard to hit these guys. And Wacha, you think of him as a young guy, but he was one of the key contributors in leading the Cardinals to the World Series just a couple of years ago. So I don't think of him as that young pitcher. Now I think of him as that number one horse in the rotation going into postseason play. Lance Lynn has been there. He's done that. The bullpen can be solid. Trevor Rosenthal is good a closer you're going to find in the National League. They don't hit quite to the level that you think they would just looking at their numbers, but they know how to score runs. They know how to win games. It's really a complete team, even without Adam Wainwright, even with an injured Matt Holliday.
You know, when you survey the league right now, just and we've talked about this, highlighted this on our show in the past, just this boost in all the young talent that has come forth. And when you talk about Trout, Bryant, Harper, talk about just the impact that they can have with their teams and that they could become contenders.
Well, they're going to have to be the guys. I mean, they're making these 23-year-olds, these 20-year-olds now, they're making them the guys on their team right away. There's not much of a lead-in period. And it's quite exciting for baseball, in my opinion. Now, what's going to be fun is to see what can they do in postseason play. Bryce Harper, we saw a small preview of it last year where he was just crushing the ball versus the Giants. Of course, they get knocked out in the first round. Mike Trout knocked out in the first round last year. Chris Bryant, could he be making his debut for the Cubs this year in postseason play? Carlos Correa, these guys are type of guys that take over a game, take over a series, Can they translate that to postseason play? Some of them do, some of them don't, so it'll be fascinating.
You know, it is fascinating, and they have this amazing young talent. What is your view just overall where the state of the game, where it is right now?
I think it's good. I mean, I know that there is still a mainstream audience that's missing on baseball that they need to get back, but it's a start right now with all these young players, and, you know, the league financially is doing fantastic. There's people in the seats. They've had good attendance this year for a lot of the contending markets, and we see teams that have been down for a while, Cubs, Astros, as we mentioned in this segment, these were fan bases that were primed to baseball at one time that filled their seats regularly. Getting these teams good again, getting the Mets good again, this can only mean good things for baseball.
Simply the best. He knows his stuff. Andy Pondillo with our MLB news and notes. You don't want to miss this segment each and every week right here at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Thank you, Andy. Be safe this weekend, okay?
Always fun.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR. The conversation continues. Welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell. As a reminder, listen to the show on the go. Just download the Yahoo Sports Radio app by searching Yahoo Sports Radio in your app store. You can listen on any computer or smart device by going to streamysr.com. That's streamysr.com. Normal data rates apply. We always make it so easy. So in our final segment tonight, we're going to shift gears and we're going to take time for a book review. And for all of the baseball enthusiasts out there, you will definitely want to go out and get a copy of this book. It is titled The Pine Tar Game, The Kansas City Royals, The New York Yankees, and Baseball's Most Absurd and Entertaining Controversy. Of course, the author is Philip Bondi, and we are so excited to have you on the show on this Friday night. Good evening, Philip.
Good evening.
Well, it's time to turn back the hands of time to, what, 1983. I won't even say how old I was then. That's 32 years ago in that unforgettable baseball game between the Kansas City Royals and the New York Yankees. The Yankees and the Royals, they were, what, fierce rivals, and your book returns to this infamous moment and the game-winning home run that becomes a game loser. So, Philip, you were actually at the game. What happened?
Well, I was covering it. You know, I'm that old. Unfortunately, I was a young sports writer,
right,
and I was covering the game. And then I covered the court hearings, and then I covered the resumption. So it was always in the back of my mind. But when it was happening, I remember that we were all very confused at first up in the press box, as was George Brett. I mean, we didn't know what was happening. Billy Martin was out there arguing and making his point with Tim McCullough, the umpire, and the umpires were huddling. And then, when they measured the bat against the plate, then we started to figure this thing out. We remembered there was an obscure rule that said the pine tar can extend beyond 18 inches from the handle. And when they called out George Brett, we were privy to watching the greatest tantrum in sports history.
Is this something that's been on kind of your bucket list that you've wanted to do for some time?
I did. You know, because I was there, because it was just so vivid in my mind. And then 2 years ago, George Brett came through New York as at the time he was the batting coach, the hitting coach for the Royals, because he kind of got tired of the trouble and quit that job. But he was the hitting coach right about at the anniversary, the 30th anniversary of the Pine Tar Game, and I interviewed him and wrote a story. But you know what? I decided that 800 words were not enough to tell this tale of all these characters involved. You know, Billy Martin, George Steinbrenner, Ewing Kaufman, George Brett, all these guys, and small market versus big market, and this fierce, fierce rivalry of the late 70s that I had remembered so clearly.
Sports columnist and author Philip Bondi is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We are celebrating his latest release. It is titled The Pine Tar Game, The Kansas City Royals, The New York Yankees, and Baseball's Most Absurd and Entertaining Controversy. So kind of give us the backstory. Talk to us about George Brett, but he liked to put pine tar on his handle to what help his grip. Kind of give us some play-by-play. Break it down.
Yeah, he was a bat slob by his
own
admission. And he liked, unlike a lot of today's players, you know, he didn't use batting gloves. He liked the feel of raw hand on raw bat. And he loved this particular bat because it was just seven grains, which most bats are 13, 14 grains. Mm-hmm. This was an extremely small, powerful bat, a strong, powerful bat, I'm sorry. And so he had used it for more than a month. And then when he used it, and for that length of time, the pine tar just kind of got massaged up and up and up. And according to a fellow who I talked to, Dean Vogelaar, who was the public relations director of the Royals at the time, the Royals were playing the Toronto Blue Jays before they played the Yankees, and Vogelaar said, "I probably remember this better than George does, but we were standing at the batting cage in Toronto, and George turned to me and said, 'I don't know how much longer I'm going to be able to get away with this bat.'" Mm-hmm. So he had an inkling, though he didn't know the consequences.
Well, and I have to ask you, too, I mean, how big of an effect did this have on his bat in terms of, like, with distance?
Yeah, no, none at all, which is why Lee McPhail, the American League president, eventually did overturn the umpire's call and restored that home run, because pine tar does not have an effect on the distance or direction of a baseball, and where he hit the ball was high at the barrel of the bat where there was mm-hmm. no pine tar. The only reason that the pine tar rule was in effect at all was because there had been some skinflint owners in the 1970s who didn't want to keep replacing baseballs after foul tips. They were getting dirty. And they didn't. It's hard to believe with
right.
the economy of baseball today that the owners were concerned back then about the price of a baseball, but that was the case.
And I think what's really cool, when I was going through the book, I mean, you really did provide some fresh insight in this book. Who were some of the folks that you interviewed and some of those in-depth profiles on with some of the players and coaches that you talked to?
Yeah, well I did talk to the players, Brett and Willie Randolph and Ron Guidry and Goose Gossage, who was the pitcher who
mm-hmm,
threw the ball,
right.
threw the fastball that he meant to go, as he said, "I meant to bury it in his neck," but it didn't work out that way. But I found it very interesting also to talk to some of the peripheral characters involved, who, you know, the officials on the team, on the two teams at the time, who were sort of insiders and saw the scenes, whether they were public relations interns or whether they were the general manager, John Scherholz, and the assistant, Dean Taylor. These were the guys that gave me insight, and then there were some very unusual characters involved. The late Roy Cohn from the Joe McCarthy hearings, he was the attorney for the Yankees, and I did interview at some length Rush Limbaugh.
Oh.
Limbaugh was the was actually the promotions director of the Royals at the time, which
That's
I didn't
right.
remember
okay.
because
yeah,
I guess
yeah.
he wasn't the Rush Limbaugh we know now. But he was, you know, he was responsible for digging up people to throw out the first baseball and to sing the national anthem.
Hey, sports columnist with the New York Daily News and author of his brand new book. Go ahead and get a copy of it. It's everywhere, Amazon.com. The Pine Tar Game, the Kansas City Royals, the New York Yankees, and baseball's most absurd and entertaining controversy. I know a while back you released a book on the NBA. Philip, we got to have you on. Let's talk some NBA and hoop it up too, okay? You're a great guest.
Yeah, still one of my favorite sports.
Absolutely. We saved the best for last. Philip Bondi's been with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Thank you, Philip.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
That, of course, was Philip Bondi, sports columnist and author of his new book, The Pine Tar Game. Want to take time to thank all of our amazing guests in our lineup. Patrick Livingston, CEO of National Golf Schools. Andy Pondillo with our weekly MLB news and notes. Christian Dyer, he opened up tonight's program, of course, covers the New York Jets for the Metro New York newspaper, and he's a contributor right here at Yahoo Sports. Nancy Lieberman, the assistant coach with the Sacramento Kings, and Peter Burns, SEC network host with ESPN. I'm Elissa Walker-Campbell, encouraging you not to drink and drive. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports. And again, we would love to connect with you. Join us at Twitter at @eRadioSports. We will see you next weekend.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.